Welcome. This is the ins and outs of opening a B&B, guest house, Airbnb, VRBO, anything that's considered a short-term rental. That's what we're talking about here tonight. I have Adam Messmer with me. He is my co-mod, my co-host. And tonight we are actually talking to Dennis Hanks. So I cannot wait to hear more about Dennis. And so as folks come in, you know, as the participant,
I think we lost you.
I think we did. Yeah.
Have any questions? It's that hotel Wi-Fi.
Yeah. Is she traveling? Oh, okay.
In the chat. I won't be monitoring.
Let me. I wonder if there's a way. Kathy, can you hear us? Can you hear us?
I can hear you guys. Can you hear me?
Yes. So you cut out for like a whole chunk.
And, it says that my internet was unstable. I am using the Wi-Fi at the hotel. I'm in Savannah.
Ah, okay, so, cool.
Sorry gotcha. About
That'll
that.
That'll do it.
That's okay. Yeah, that happens.
Sorry about that.
No, that's okay. We lost you at Airbnb. No, anyway. We lost you. Yeah. So you were given the general introduction.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I will keep an eye on the chat. If anybody has any questions, put them in the chat. And what I'm going to do, and Dora says, try the hotspot on your phone. I think what I'm going to do is I may jump on my phone in addition to here. So if you lose me, I can always just switch to the phone.
Cool. Sure.
Anyway, absolutely. So Adam, I'm going to let you tell a little bit about you while I kind of get turned on my phone here. So just in case it happens again, I'll be here. So,
yeah, absolutely. Let me get my backup on also just in case. But yeah, my name is Adam Messmer. I am a mortgage broker. I broker with Motto Mortgage here in Columbus, Ohio. I always have to look because I never want to give the wrong one, but my NMLS ID is 980119. And I know that, but like, I feel like I'm going to go to mortgage hell if I say the wrong number. So I always have to look, even though I say it 10 times a day, but this goes out to the internet and I don't want it to go to the far reaches of the earth without my proper NMLS ID number. So I have to cheat. And that's what I do anyways. So, yeah. So I'm a broker with Motto Mortgage. We do a whole variety of different types of lending for real estate investors. And I would love to talk to you about all of that. So if anybody wants to talk about that, please feel free to give me a call, 614-595-3457. And I'll put all my stuff in the chat and it's great. I also own an Airbnb, a short-term rental that's listed on Airbnb, among other places. And I use a management company that runs it. And I'm excited to talk about all that because they're wonderful. They're going to be on the podcast in like next month. So that'll be fun. So I'm super excited about that. But yeah, that's a little bit about me.
Nice. Very nice. Now you see me again, you know, this is me, you know, with like windblown and in Savannah, and the picture below is me, you know, with
all dolled up.
Yeah. So yeah. Anyway, so I'm there. So hopefully, it just says that I have not connected to the audio yet because it will, you know, give us feedback.
Sure.
But if I jump, if you lose me altogether and I can't get back on, I'll simply activate my audio and I'll come back on
like a mic. Miracle.
Yeah.
Like a Zoom miracle.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So in the meantime, that puts us all on here. So we're all good. All right. So let's get started. We heard a little bit about Dennis or a little bit about Adam, but now I want to hear a little bit about Dennis. So Dennis, give us your background and what brought you to where you are today. Give us a little bit of the history.
Sure. So kind of exciting. We were living in Massachusetts, my wife and I and our kids, and we had a vacation home here in Florida. We came down to Florida, I want to say it was 2013, and we're staying at our vacation home here, and I'm scrolling through some things, and up pops this job opportunity for a part-time person to run the Central Florida Vacation Rental Group. So I'm sitting around, and I just decided to go meet with a couple of guys on it. The next day, they'll call me back, and they say, we'd love to hire you to do this. And I'm like, seriously? Well, I still have a job back in Massachusetts. So it's going to take some time. Luckily, they were willing to wait, and we ended up moving to Florida full time. And I took over this part time opportunity in Central Florida, which then a year later turned into taking on another association, the second association, which was the statewide association. And we have two associations I was running independently. And then I said, look, this is crazy. We need to merge these together, and we need to expand this group. And we took a bold move of just really getting deep into this and growing the association into where we are today, which is kind of phenomenal when I throw some numbers at you.
Well, I did see that it, at first it was like the Florida Vacation Rental Management Association, and then it turned into like the Florida Alliance for Vacation Rentals. And so I wasn't sure of the difference between those two. And you're saying those were two separate organizations at one point?
So originally it was the Central Florida Vacation Rental Management Group, which was just Orlando, Metro Orlando area. Okay. They handled a few different counties there, and that was an independent group. And then the statewide Florida Vacation Rental Management Association was totally separate, both nonprofit standalones. Okay. I ended up running both of them. And then I said to the both boards, "Hey, look, you guys got to get in here and merge together, and let's one organization." And it evolved. So this started in 2015, the merger. We are now statewide. We have 8 chapters, including that Central Florida group, which is a chapter. And we have 8 chapters around the state.
So how do you actually launch a chapter? I mean, do you just get enough activity in an area that you then reach those numbers and decide it's time to open a new chapter?
So what we really wanted to do, the focus was to bring together the entire state and have representation from all those chapter areas in the state. So we looked at some heavily populated short-term rental areas. So Orlando and the greater Orlando area, so we'll say that 3 or 4 county region of greater Orlando has 45,000 vacation rentals just in that Orlando market. So they were our first and foremost, our biggest chapter to start. And then we went out and we said to the other regions, hey, we want you to be represented in this association statewide. You need to get together a dozen property managers to form a chapter, and then that will grow from there. So 12 people or more that are property owners or managers can form a chapter in their region, and then the statewide association accepts them, approves of them, and then one person is voted to be on the board of directors from that chapter region.
Cool.
That is crazy on how that grows like that. Let me ask you this. What made you make the decision to finally, when you moved to Florida, how did you make the decision that this is what you wanted to do?
Well, we had 112 inches of snow in Massachusetts.
Go ahead.
That 112 inches of snow in Massachusetts was an easy decision to move to Florida.
Absolutely. So I think we lost Kathy. And Kathy, if you can hear us, if you want to switch over to your phone, that might be better than the Wi-Fi at the hotel, because it seems like it might be giving you some problems. Oh, we got two Kathys.
Hold on. I got to get down to one. All right.
Love technology.
It is. It's the best.
Oh, now of course I've got to move away.
Oh, you're still on. You're still on two things.
Yeah,
you got to get off.
I got to figure out how to get out of one.
Just exit out of it. Can you exit out of it?
Doesn't let me.
Go ahead and ask some questions and I'll be back.
Okay, sounds good. So, Dennis, if you got it? Okay. Can you hang up on the phone? Oh, there we go. Okay, cool. We got it. Fantastic. So anyways, Dennis, okay. So can you tell us a little bit more about the organization and like what it does and how it brings owners together?
So we're a nonprofit association. We've been around for almost 28 years come April. And it's basically made up of owners, managers, vendors, anyone that's involved in the vacation rental or short-term rental industry is part of this association as a member and pays dues. The interesting thing too, in the way we structured it is that an owner, let's say you own one home, you're managing your own home, or even you have a property manager, you want to be part of the association. It's $75 for the entire year to be a member. Okay. And gives you discounts to come to our events. It gives you industry information every month. You get constant communications. We do a lot of government affairs and lobbying efforts. So if there's regulatory things going on, we're going to let you know. We're going to say, call this senator, call this representative, call this city councilor, whoever it may be. So you get a lot of communication from us. Some people say that's too much communication, but I'm not sure that can happen. But we're just all inclusive. And that's kind of why we changed our name to the Alliance, because we wanted everybody to just be a partner in the association.
Mm-hmm. That's awesome. That's great. That's so important. The biggest, I mean, I feel like one of the biggest obstacles that most people have in starting a short-term rental is looking for the regulatory piece. And it sounds like you have a huge impact on that with your lobbying efforts and just letting people know what calls to action need to be put in place in order to protect owners and management companies. Is that fair?
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, I come from a lobbying background and I've worked in government as well up north. I was an economic development person underneath the governor in Massachusetts. So I was involved heavily in a lot of government activity and worked in both the city and state level. So coming down here and getting engaged in this, because we really didn't have a good grassroots local effort to get involved in and engage. So we built that up. We also hire a team of folks in Tallahassee at the state capitol to work on our legislative lobbying efforts at the state level. So we put a lot of money and a lot of stock into what we do on the government affairs side of things. But it also goes down to even that local level where we can get these owners and managers involved in the activity if a regulation's coming up in their city. And we've seen some horrendous ones, trust me. We've seen some that are trying to just put people out of business. And we've beat those back and we've been able to, in some cases, we've even seen litigation where we're suing folks. And it's kind of interesting here in Florida because there's also something called the Burt Harris Act. And Burt Harris means is if a local government impacts your ability to rent your home and takes away some of your value, you can sue the city and they have to buy your property. So it's almost like a taking and you get your money back, what you lost in value. It's amazing, and it's been used really effectively.
That's crazy. Wow. So go ahead.
It's really a big property rights issue, and that's what we hang our hat on a lot is this is all about property rights when it comes to real estate.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You should be able to do with what do what you want with your own property. I that's why I hate HOAs. But yeah, I 100% get that. I'm curious. What is the general complaint from municipalities that you see? And then what's the answer? Like what are you going up against and how do you help resolve it? Or help legislators see the light.
So the really interesting thing is we are very pro-regulation. We want regulation. They just have to be fair regulations. And that's kind of where we lead off and we'll go into the city or the county or whoever it may be and say, yeah, we're okay with regulations, but let's be fair about it. When it's putting people out of business, we don't agree with it. Mm-hmm. But the three biggest things are noise, parking, and trash. It doesn't matter if you're in Florida or if you're in California. That seems to be the big issue with everyone. you know, a neighbor gets rubbed the wrong way because there's trash in the curb and there's a party next door. And we try to explain to them that, look, as a vacation rental owner or manager, you don't want a party in your home, but it does happen. There's people that come in and there's people that party. Another great thing about statutes here in Florida is if there's a party going on or somebody's broken your house rules, you call the sheriff, you say, hey, under chapter 509, I want this guy out of my house. The sheriff can immediately remove that person from the home. So it's a real easy procedure if they've done something wrong. But there's so many tools that you can use as an owner or manager to really make sure that you're managing things the right way. Of course, you know, it's just a matter of being a good neighbor in most cases.
Do you see municipalities that have a lack of legislation or a lack of regulatory action? Because like the chapter 509, is that like a county thing or is that at what level is that? Is that a state rule?
That's a state statute that, believe it or not, in 2011, we worked on getting what's called a preemption in the state, where the preemption said that if you have a local regulation in place already for vacation rentals, you can keep that. But after 2011, you cannot prohibit vacation rentals. You can't change the duration or the frequency of vacation rentals. You're protected after 2011. So our preemption is one of the strongest in the countries. I don't think there's more than two or three nationally that have a preemption in place like we do. So it really protects vacation rental managers to that extent that a city can't willy-nilly go, hey, we don't want you guys anymore. We're abolishing all vacation rentals in the city. That would be illegal by the state statute and the preemption that we have. So you can set up rules and registrations. Another thing that local governments always say is, well, we want to know where these guys are all located. So we want to have a registration. And, you know, they'll charge you X amount of dollars to register with the city. Sometimes the city wants to come in and inspect the vacation rental. So we're okay with that until it goes a little bit too far and it gets really bizarre. And, you know, they'll come up and they'll inspect your home and go, I don't like your landscaping. We're not going to give you a registration approval. And we're like, what? So there's some crazy.
That's ridiculous. Yeah.
Yeah. There's some crazy things like that that happen, but having a strong grassroots effort in, we have a general counsel and a lobby team and everything else involved in this. So we can usually beat back those crazy things that come up.
Well, I do have a question. So how can someone get something like this started in another state, not just necessarily in Florida? Because we run into a lot of the same situations all over. And so are there other organizations in other states that we could tap into?
Yeah, there's a lot of states that have an organization just like us. You're in Georgia. There is one in Georgia. We work with different states all the time. Some are a little envious of us because we have 26% of the entire U.S. market in Florida for vacation rentals. It's a $30 billion a year industry in Florida, just the short-term rental industry. We're actually, the numbers are staggering that, you know, the job numbers and everything else that's happening. It's just crazy what happens in Florida here, and it continues to grow. Over 12 months' time, we saw 70,000 new short-term rental listings in Florida in the last year. 70,000 on Airbnb and Vrbo.
That's wild.
So it's no slowing up on the market. But yeah, there's associations like us across the country. There's a national association, but national kind of doesn't form new groups. They seem like they just kind of do their own thing and they've got it's kind of like turning a battleship to do anything with national. So
yeah,
we're just standalone Florida and kind of doing our thing here.
That's
so
awesome.
Melvin wants to know if there's anything like you in the Maryland, Washington, DC area.
I believe that it's not a formal organization because I did talk to somebody in Maryland probably about a year ago. And they were shut down completely, I think, because of COVID, they were shut down. And we had some discussions with them and gave them some kind of the best practices that we've used. Like I say, we've been around for 28 years, so we've kind of seen it all.
Wow.
This is such an interesting conversation. So, gosh, you know me, Adam, you know me, I'm the entrepreneur. I'm like, oh, wow, if we don't have something like this, how can we start one?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it sounds like I think there's some value in, I mean, definitely somebody that's familiar with the legislation and then the legislative process of whatever municipality it is that controls, you know, your regulatory situation. So yeah, that's awesome. I'm not that guy. I know loans, but that, you know, but Kathy, if you want to go do that and utilize that law degree you haven't been using for a while, then I highly recommend it. You know, and next month we'll have to ask Ben about that because, so one of my big claim to fame is that I use a property manager. I don't do anything on my short-term rental and I love it. And it's the best. And I think in my opinion, it's the only way to own a short-term rental. I know Kathy, she gets in there and she like changes the sheets and does all that stuff. Yeah. And that's great, but I don't want to do that at all. So I'm so glad that there's an organization out there that helps property managers guide, you know, owners who really don't know anything. Like, I don't even know I should be co-hosting a podcast about short-term rentals because I know the financing and that's about it. But yeah, that's incredible. So you've been around for 28 years. So can you talk about the change of short-term rentals? Because Airbnb has not been around for 28 years, right? Like, it's not that old.
No.
So what was it like with the onset of Airbnb and VRBO for your organization?
Well, that's been the tech change. You're seeing so much change in the technology nowadays. You know, from back when even Airbnb started, which I think was what, maybe 2012, 10, something like that, when they came on the scene. You know, back in the day, it was HomeAway, and you had maybe one or two FlipKey and TripAdvisor and a few others, but that was about it. But now you've just got dozens of platforms out there. And you know, the good thing about being part of an association like us is we're going to give you the trends. We're going to give you the information on how to make more money, whether you're a single owner and you're doing it yourself and you're managing your own property, or if you're managing, you got a property manager. We've got property managers that manage 1,000 homes here in Florida, and that's their business. They just manage your property for you. They get a percentage of it, but how do you make more money? Are you renting a barbecue grill? Are you renting canoes? Are you renting bicycles? You know, are you charging somebody for a late checkout to make a few more bucks? Hey, stay an extra day, get a late checkout. Those ways of revenue enhancement are things that we work on constantly with our owners and managers. So
you had me at revenue enhancement. So can we get into some of, you mentioned a couple of things I didn't even thought of. Bicycles. Bicycle rental is a great idea.
Right.
Can you talk a little bit more about some of those enhancements?
So, and here's another great thing. I mean, I could go on and on because it's kind of, now I get starting to get pumped up about all the cool things that are happening. We've got another company now that's doing a display in the home. So it's like a giant iPad. It goes on the wall in the home. You walk in and it says, you need to check in here. You click the button and it tells you the house rules. And then it's going to say, do you want to dine out? Here's the local restaurants. Do you want to rent a bike? Here's a place to rent a bike. Now, even in Florida now, some of these companies are giving these to you for free as the owner or the manager of the home, as long as they're selling the ads for the local businesses that are on that device. So there's so much cool stuff going on. I mean, noise monitoring, things you can do to just know, hey, nobody's in the home, but the humidity in the home went up. So we think there's something wrong with the air conditioner, or there's a water leak or something. Technology has just evolved so much in this industry. It's just crazy what's happening. You know, revenue, we go back to that. We'll talk about direct bookings. You know, everybody uses Airbnb and Vrbo, and, you know, you pay your percentage to the platforms. But now the huge thing is everybody's like, why am I giving all my money away? I need to find a way to book these people through my own website. I need to find a way to get them back so that they're booking with me and not a platform. We've even got one of our software companies now that is going to give you vacation rental management software to help you do direct bookings and to go on to the smaller channels as well as the larger channels and really enhance that direct booking. So it's kind of crazy what's going on in the industry on the tech side of things. but it's all good for owners and managers.
That's awesome. That's incredible. I'm so happy that your organization exists. This is the best. So, okay, cool. So you're out there, you're making sure that the proper regulations are in place. You're working with municipalities to educate people about the benefits of short-term rentals and what's going on in the community. You're telling owners about all this stuff. That's awesome. That's incredible. And so you mentioned earlier that like that there's a national organization, but it's like turning a battleship. It's like turning the Titanic. And then we had some questions about local organizations, but you're by far the biggest. If somebody wanted to start an organization like this, what kind of advice would you give them? Like, what kind of backgrounds are you looking for people that would be in leadership and working to develop this kind of organization locally?
So it's rather simple. You can start out from scratch, just like we did. You know, 28 years ago, it was started by a handful of people. And guess what they started it out as? It was a volunteer group. And it was because some local folks were saying, we want to get rid of these vacation rentals. 28 years ago, they were saying that. So this group banded together. They were all owners and managers. And they made it a kind of a ragtag volunteer group. And they fought it off. Our association, until I came on board in 2013, was still pretty much a volunteer organization. There was no paid staff person to really handle and assemble it and put it together. I mean, my life and my history was managing membership associations. So I kind of knew how to do that. The most important thing for people is to be able to engage local government. And I say this to my board of directors even now. If you know that there's going to be an issue in your community, get out in front of it. Even if there isn't an issue, call your commissioners, your city councilors, your state rep, spend 15 minutes with each of them. Let them know who you are and what you do. Let them know how important your business is, because you want to be recognized as just like anybody else in the hospitality industry. And telling your story is that's 80% of the argument right there. People don't even understand it. It's funny because I have some people on my board of directors that own two homes. Their homes are valued at somewhere around $20 million in Florida. And they have so much invested in those two homes, more so than probably the guy that manages on behalf of 100 other homes of people that, you know, they're managing for. So it really is all about the story. It's all about making sure you're protecting yourself by getting out in front of these things so that people know you. There is so much misinformation about the vacation rental industry. You know, when there's one bad incident, everybody gravitates to that. You know, it's funny because for 5 years we were doing a regulation in one of the cities. And the only thing that everybody remembers is 7 years ago, a Bentley was rented and it was smashed into a gated community and it caught on fire. They tell that story for 7 years and we're like, okay, but what about all the good stories?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Because, yeah, there's the one thing. The rotten apple spoils the barrel, whatever. But that's nuts.
I just want to jump in and say in Canal Winchester, Ohio, we were the first bed and breakfast to get open inside the actual city limits. And what we did is we did our homework, did our research, and then we went to the city and we said, we know the Ohio Revised Code allows us to have a residential guest house, but we want to know what the city requires. And they said, we don't have any. We don't know what to require. And so they actually gave me a grant to write the program so that if anyone else in the city wanted to open, that with my research, everybody opens and gets all the same inspections and certificates and all of that through our city. So I'm the one that actually wrote the program for the city, and they gave me a grant to do that.
Well, then it sounds like we've got our leader of our organization.
See, and that's the thing that's kind of unique about us, because in the state statutes for vacation rentals, B&Bs are separate than vacation rentals. Hotels, motels, everybody's completely different. we're under completely different statutes. Sometimes the B&B people say they're not regulated the way we are. And we're like, well, we don't serve food. You know, we're a little bit different. So we're in those different kind of buckets and categories of regulation. The great thing is in Florida, we've gained so much respect as a hospitality group now. I actually sit on the state's licensing board for vacation rentals, hotels, restaurants, and all of that. So we've really gained some stature now, and that's really what it takes. It takes years and years of kind of that due diligence to make sure that people understand who you are and what you do. Some of our counties are bringing in, you know, just for the bed tax alone, like $50 and $60 million a year into the local county for bed taxes from vacation rentals. It's just, and we're outpacing the hotels in some of those cities and counties.
Wow. Wow. Do you foresee a change in market share between short-term rentals and hotels, motels, or B&Bs and that kind of thing? I mean, where are we at in that? Are we growing? Are we shrinking? Is it staying the same?
No, we're definitely growing here in Florida. The market has just been crazy. I mean, like the real estate market everywhere, everybody's buying up things. Things are staying on the market here for about 3 days and they're gone. Usually there's multiple offers on them. The prices have gone up considerably. You have to be very cautious where you buy because things can change very quickly. You can be on one side of the street and you have a 7-day minimum. You can be on the other side of the street and you have a 30-day minimum. You can have another area that's got daily rentals that you can rent. So there's a lot of things you have to really do your due diligence on. Make sure you check on your return on the investment. There's some heavily saturated areas like in the Orlando market, 45,000 units in Orlando. There's a lot of competition there. And you could take the same house, move it out of Orlando to the beach area, and probably get $200 more per night.
Wow.
So it's,
go ahead.
You got to do the research.
Yeah. If somebody wanted to invest in Florida, is there a good spot in Florida that's up and coming or that hasn't been too tapped yet?
You know, it's kind of interesting. COVID has shifted everything. You know, you thought you knew the industry and then again, it just went crazy. We're seeing some of the rural areas now getting a little bit more interesting to people. You know, the rural areas where there's great bass fishing and there's great, you know, outdoor types of activities, people buying into those markets. The beach market is always very good and heavy, you know, up in the Florida Panhandle is a good investment market. People are buying condos and homes up there. You know, Walton County up in the Panhandle has like 16,000 vacation rentals in that one county. And the rates, they used to have a seasonality and it's kind of changed. So you don't see as much seasonality in the market. At one time, you know, it was a ghost town and now people are just, the drive market has taken over up there. So that's been really improving quite a bit. That's, you know, just one of those things that you've got to look at on the trends and figure out where's your best investment. Like I say, all the beach markets get really good rates going on. I talked to somebody last week in Naples, Florida, which is down in the Southwest area. Mm-hmm. They are at 96% occupancy of 1,200 homes that they manage. And that was for the entire year. They're just like booming. It's crazy.
What's the split between people that own one short-term rental in your organization and then people that own like 1,000? Or, I mean, is there some kind of delineating factor of like, okay, the average guy owns like one or two or three, or is the majority of them owned by larger entities?
No, Florida, I mean, you've got the pockets of international ownership too. There's different areas in Florida that have a lot of UK owners. And then there's different areas that have a lot of Brazilian owners and a lot of them that come from Germany. So you've got the international ownership. You've got a lot of Canadians who had properties down here that are with property managers. On the individual, what we're seeing the trend now is 5 homes or less owned by an owner is typically that new growing component in the industry. 70% of all Florida homes are probably with people that have five or less homes that they own and manage here in Florida. Mm-hmm. So the smaller ownership and management side is growing. The larger ones are far and few between. You're probably, if I had to guess, there's probably like 7,000 good-sized property managers in the state, and the rest are all those owner-operators of five or less homes.
Okay, that's cool.
But it's, what? It varies.
Mm-hmm. See, I'm thinking, you know, where we are is a lot of the five or less, because a lot of times folks will buy a vacation property for themselves. And then, of course, they're not there year round. So that's when they decide that they want to short term rent it when they're not using it. So oftentimes, I'm thinking there's quite a few in our complex that it's just a single owner. They just own that one unit and they just want to rent it when they're not there. But once I saw the income that can come in from that, now I'm looking at buying a second unit in my same complex. And I'm in Sarasota in Florida. And so now I'm looking at actually rent or actually buying a second unit there in the same complex. And so once we are there for 2 years, then we can rent it out. And that way we can move into the new one to get our 2 years behind us. And then that way we can rent out the one that we're in now.
Hmm. And the other interesting thing where I think the industry has changed too, you know, COVID has changed everything for us, but now you've got also these kind of what we call the digital nomads. You know, they don't have to work at an office anymore. They're traveling. The kids are going to online school, or, you know, they're just traveling and they'll stay in Sarasota for a month. And then they'll go to the other coast, the Atlantic coast, and they'll stay in Daytona for a month. And if you can work and play and do all those things while you're on the road, it's just a whole new market.
That sounds good to me.
Absolutely. It's funny you mention that. So my cousin, like the other day, he's like, "Hey man, I'm going to go to Fort Lauderdale for like 3 weeks and work." Cause he's like permanent work from home. I'm like, "Okay." He's like, "Do you want to go?" I'm like, "Not for 3 weeks, but I'll come down for like a week and hang out." And so I was talking to my wife, Rachel, and she's like, "Oh yeah, let's totally do it." So like in a matter of like a half an hour, we went from who's going to Fort Lauderdale, you know, to boom, it's us. It's and a couple other people are all going down, and we've got each got our own short-term rentals. And so we're not on top of each other and sharing a bathroom or anything like that. And yeah, it's going to be great. I can't wait. It's going to be cool. But yeah, we both tend to work. She works remote like half the time. I can work from wherever, but yeah, it's the coolest thing.
Dennis, I want to circle back a little bit and ask you, how did you actually get into the short-term rental space originally?
Well, it's funny because I had a couple of vacation homes when we lived in Massachusetts and we were there permanently. We had a vacation home in New Hampshire and it was on top of a mountain up there. And then we had the one in Florida that we purchased. And then we ended up purchasing a second one after that. The market was just right. So it was good investments. And then it was perfect when we moved down here because we had a home to move right into. But being part of the vacation home industry has been great for us. Like I say, up north, I was working in government and nonprofits and membership associations. So it was a good natural fit for me here to come into the vacational market.
That's awesome.
So are you happy with the move, or do you miss all the changing of the seasons that you had up north?
Absolutely not. my son sends me the photos all the time and he goes, "Dad, it's March, it's snowing." And I go, "Yeah, good for you. You know where to move to." So I love Florida. I mean, the weather is always good for me. Even when it's hot or it's cold, you know, you adapt to it. And it's just such a different environment from where we were up north. My wife and I talk about that all the time. We would never move.
Yeah, that's awesome.
Well, we're discovering the more we're there, the more we love it. And we just happen to be in Savannah at the moment, but we live in Columbus, Ohio, in the suburb of Columbus. I'm close to Adam. And then we're just here in Savannah for a few days, but then we actually own the condo in Sarasota and we're loving it. The more we're there, the more we love it. So I get that. And I did think I would miss the seasons. I did go back home for Christmas, but we're headed we're headed back to Sarasota here in just a few days. So I appreciate that. Now, how in the world did you actually find, Dennis, how did you find the properties that you wanted to buy? What was your process? We have a lot of newbies on the call. And what is your process when you were actually looking for a property to use as a short-term investment?
So for me, it was the regulation side because I knew that end of it and just wanted to make sure that, you know, those properties were going to be a good fit for me. What's the return on the investment? I mean, I didn't have to finance any of the properties, luckily. So the investment side was more important for me. You know, what were the existing rates? You know, there's some great tools. We use a tool here in Florida. It's called Key Data. So Key Data is so cool because it will give you anything you can imagine, real-time data on vacation rentals per city and county. And it'll tell you the trends, the market rate, what people are charging per night, when it peaks, when it's down. It'll give you all that information so that you can make a decision like, wow, I know I can get this 3-bedroom pool home and I can get $500 a night. But if I buy it in Orlando, I'm only going to get $250 a night. So those are really great tools to be able to use to figure out where you can go, you know. And then also, you know, I'm going to go to St. Pete and I'm going to buy this really cute house in St. Pete. My wife loves it, but you can only rent it out 12 times per year. Are you going to get the money back that you want? So those are really big key decision-making things that you've got to look at wherever you go before you buy.
Now, is that information available no matter where you are in the country, or is that just common for Florida?
I believe that they are expanding it to Florida. There's other programs out there that you can look at, AirDNA and some of these others that you can subscribe to and you can get some data. The cool thing about Key Data is it's not scraped data, it's real time. So they scrape all this information direct from the property manager's software. So the property managers like to use it because they can see that there's 50 other property managers in the area and what they're charging, and won't tell them who's charging what, but you can see that real-time information, whereas AirDNA and some of the others will scrape it off the internet and you never know if you're getting, you know, real solid backup information. So you just got to be careful where that data source comes from.
So now, of course, I have to ask you this question because I know Adam is using an actual management company. So when you started, did you do your own flips and buy your own linen and run your own, you know, check in and check out and that sort of thing? How did you evolve to where you are today?
Yeah, we were real selective when we were doing it. So we would make sure that we only rented it, you know, to people that we could qualify. Family and friends would use it, you know, things like that. We weren't really heavy into making sure that we're making every nickel that we could. We just wanted to make sure that our home was going to be protected in whatever we do. And, you know, some of the tools, like we were talking about earlier, it would have been so cool if we had those types of tools to use to monitor how many people are in the home, noise activity. I mean, all that type of stuff that's available now is so different from when we were renting.
It is a process. I realize that because as I've come along, I started doing all of my own flips. I was doing all of my own check-ins, my own checkouts. And I finally realized there was such a thing as a channel manager out there, which made my life a whole lot easier once I did that. And it came with, you know, a free website. And so that made my life so much easier. But then I meet Adam and he's using a management company and his life is incredibly more easy than mine. So Adam, tell us a little bit about what you do.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. So, I mean, well, I'll tell you about my process. So we have one. We were in the market for a long-term rental and we were looking in probably a C neighborhood. And because that was kind of what we figured the price point would support, like as far as the rent goes, right? Then as we were looking at that, we came across a house. It was super cute. It was a rehab. It had just been done and flipped. And it was a for sale by owner, and the seller was there at the showing. And she was saying, she's like, hey, this, you know, because you could get like maybe $1,000 a night for this, or not $1,000 a night. I wish $1,000 a night. That's not that's Florida money. No, it'd be $1,000 a month for this place as a long-term rental. And that seemed okay. But it was, I mean, you would have netted like maybe $100 or $200, I think, if that, for the place with the price point and everything. But she's like, oh, you could Airbnb it and make a bunch of money. And we're like, that's cool. This is a cute house, but it's also a creepy neighborhood, and I wouldn't want to Airbnb here anyway. So, but we took that idea and we found another place across the freeway, so to speak, to a B neighborhood, and ended up buying. And immediately my first thought was to go to my property manager, Ben. And I said, hey, what do you want to walk this with me and see? And he said, absolutely. We walked through it. He then wrote up this awesome, like, projection based on what he figured from, you know, some of the sources that we talked about, some of the metrics, of AirDNA and things like that, to calculate like, okay, this is like what a good year looks like. This is what a bad year looks like. This is what you should average. And we did all that and then launched it in February of 2020, just in time for COVID. So the best time to open an Airbnb, like I said, I don't know a lot about Airbnb. I don't know that I should be co-hosting, but luckily my property manager does, and he helped us weather the storm through that. So that was fantastic. He opened it up to longer term stuff. We ended up getting somebody. We got some students that were there for like 3 months because Ohio State shut down and they couldn't go anywhere. And they were foreign students, so they needed a place to stay because they were finishing their degrees. We ended up breaking even in 2020. We made some money in 2021, but back to the initial purchase. So we went through it. We walked through it. We got the thing. And then I said, I don't want to furnish. I like, can you furnish it? And he's like, sure. I'm like, okay. So I paid him $5,500. He furnishes the whole thing. He gave me a spreadsheet of like all this. He's like, here's all the stuff we put in these things. And it's like, it was just like a well-oiled machine. It's like, oh, did you have to set up beds? No, I didn't set up anything. I didn't do anything. I've been in the house twice, once to walk through it. And another time, because I had some friends that stayed in it and we went to go pick them up to go to dinner. And that's been it. And it's the best. I highly recommend it.
Adam, I love that story. I love it every time you tell it, because it's I'm all about passive income, as you can see from my picture there. And so it says that I'm a passive income coach, and I love the fact that yours is so passive. Mine's a little different. I simply opened a guest house, a bed and breakfast inside my home, in the home that I live in. And that's a little different than some, but we are a residential guest house. And again, the Ohio Revised Code allowed us to do it. The city didn't know how. So we had to research that together, and we opened, and we've been open since October of 2016. And I actually make off of each room. I have 3 rooms inside my house. I rent them separately. And I actually make off of each room what a bedroom apartment would cash flow. I cash flow from each room. So it's like having 3 more rental units, actual rental units in my portfolio. So I love that. And I just am getting ready to launch another short-term rental in Columbus, Ohio, May 1st. So I'm excited about that. So
that's awesome.
That's cool.
I have a quick question, Kathy, because I was thinking about this the other day. And I don't know that we've ever discussed it. Do you dynamically price your rooms, or is it just like a flat rate, like, this is what it is? And
mine is a flat rate, because when I opened, my audience, my biggest audience was an art studio in Canal Winchester that brings in artists from around the world, art students from around the world to take an art class. And I did not want one student sitting next to another, because they get very intimately close to each other that whole week, because they're in this class. You know how it is when you're in a class. I didn't want them to look at each other and say, you're paying how much? Like,
I'm paying this. How come you're paying now? Oh, God, we need to do a reality television show based around your bed and breakfast. I love that idea. Can we please do that? That would be the best. That would be great. Netflix, if you're listening,
so
you've got an idea.
do you guys have a lot of arbitrage and other things happening up in your area that you see going on with the industry?
We do. We have quite a bit in Columbus that's going on with arbitrage. Yes, we do. But we have, and Adam, you know the gals that run Thanks for Visiting. That's their website. And they do a lot of arbitrage, and they teach the integrity around the arbitrage. And so it's a strong community, but everybody is doing it the correct way. And Columbus, Ohio knew that they needed more overnight. And so they actually have a certification program where if you're in the city of Columbus, you can get a certificate to arbitrage, to, you know, use a home like that. And so it is approved. But again, you have to go through the process and make sure you get your certificate so that they know you're doing that. But they have made a system that you can do that in Columbus, Ohio.
What's that like in Florida? Is arbitrage a common practice or not really?
Yeah, we have about five cities that are really kind of the top in the country for arbitrage here. A lot of folks doing it, getting into the market that way instead of actually purchasing the home. You know, they'll do a long-term lease and then short-term rental it out every guest. It's something that's constantly growing. Miami, Orlando, Tampa, those markets are the ones that are seeing a lot of the growth. But we've started seeing it in some of the panhandle and other areas too.
Is that a different type of certification similar to what Columbus has, or is it all just kind of one deal in order to do that in Florida?
In Florida, there's no certification or any type of, you know, clearance that you need to do it. As long as the owner of that property is knowing that you're going to use it as a short-term rental. A lot of folks do it because they get an investment, steady income coming out of it. Some of the folks that are arbitraging will give them a little kickback if they get their percentages up higher than normal. So there's some profit sharing going on, but it's a healthy market here in Florida.
Do you have any guidance for people that would be looking to arbitrage in either side, like a sample arrangement or something? Because you mentioned profit sharing, things like that. Like suppose you were an owner that owned a bunch of units and maybe you wanted to have that stable income, but you didn't want to deal with Airbnb and maybe you, I not triple net lease, but like maybe you added other, like, hey, look, hey, management company, you know, you can rent this 12 unit apartment building from me and Airbnb it. But I also want you to do all the repairs. So if anything breaks, you got to fix it, that kind of thing. Do you give any guidance around that kind of arrangement, or is that not really a thing?
We haven't done any guidance, but we have our general counsel. He specifically just deals with vacation rentals in Florida. He's been doing it for years, and he does some webinars with us on arbitrage. He does agreements. So we kind of just send everybody over to him and say, if you want to do it the right way, talk to him about the illegal side of it and let him work on that for you. Because there's just so many ins and outs that you could never, every deal is different.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, that makes sense.
But we've started to see even some large apartment buildings down here dedicated strictly to short-term rentals. Even some of the communities, you know, gated communities, it's 99% vacation rentals in those communities down here. There's nobody that lives long term.
Yeah. Wow. What are some of the things that people need to think about? Like, because like I said, like Kathy was saying earlier, we have most of our audiences are folks that are people that are looking to get into this for the first time. Any kind of advice on that in a general way that maybe you haven't discussed yet?
No, I think it's just do your research. You've got to really thoroughly think it all through, run your numbers 10 times before you make a decision, because we find people that, you know, they get into this, they think it's easy. You know, sometimes, you know, the person lives in Ohio and their unit's in Florida and they think, I can all do it online and, you know, I can handle it. in Florida, there's a lot of requirements. Like sometimes, depending upon the community, you have to have what's called a local agent, somebody that's going to be able to respond within 7 days a week, 24 hours a day, within an hour or two, if there's an emergency. So having those key people in place to help you like that, if you're doing it from afar, is really important. Think so all I'm that through.
I'm hearing that you got to have a team. Is that right?
You've got to have a team if you're going to do all that work on your own. And that's why I know you love the management side of things, because you don't have to worry about it. If something goes wrong, they handle it.
Out of total professional selfishness, do you have any facts on like how many people finance these things or what kind of financing they do or anything like that? Or do they own them outright? Do they buy them in cash? Anything about that?
Most of the people are buying the rentals here in Florida with cash. You know, they're just, some of them are financing. Financing is a little tough for some folks here. So they're just doing cash buys, or they're doing 1031s, and there's all different ways they've been doing things.
Sure. Yeah. It is, I will say, it can be very difficult to, not very difficult, but like it is, there's that's, it's one more challenge, because at the end of the day, if you're trying to get into this and you're trying to buy something and the other guy has a cash offer and you have a financing contingency, then that's, you know, that's just one more challenge. But that's always been the challenge in real estate, that a cash buyer is always going to win if it's, you know, if their price is the same and you've got one contingent on financing and one that's a cash, you're always going to do it. Now the interesting thing about leveraging a cash offer and being able to make a cash offer is that if you were to make a cash offer, you can then do what's called delayed financing after the fact. So, and I have a bunch of lenders that do it. But let's say you do want to go out and you want to take it down with cash, but at the end of the day, you don't want to have all your money tied up in this one place. Then you call somebody like me, Adam Mesmer at Modern Mortgage, and do a delayed financing deal where you can take your cash back. And it's usually 75% of the purchase price, but you can start the process the day after you close, and you usually have your money within 45 days. So that's, I mean, if you want to be competitive in the Florida market, it sounds like cash is king, but this is a good backup if you've got, you know, if you don't want to tie up all your cash and you do want to still have some leverage without the headache of going through a purchase loan.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, things are just turning over too quickly here. You know, a lot of times we're seeing people are just virtually buying these properties. They're not even showing up in Florida. You know, somebody's walking them around with a FaceTime camera on their phone and showing them the property. And they're like, yep, I'll take it. Things are just turning over real quick.
Well, funny that you would say that, because my favorite thing to do is that I took out a line of credit from my actual home so that I had the cash. And then I did that. I've bought two properties in Florida sight unseen, and then I had to fly down to see what I bought. And the condo that I have in Sarasota, I was in contract for it before I ever saw it. But then once I closed, I did what Adam was talking about, and then I went back through and financed it so that I could then pay back the line of credit. So now I have the line of credit to use yet again. And so that's kind of my process. So yes, that does work very well.
Let's say you're not in the highly competitive market of Florida, and you wanted to buy something, but you wanted to be creative about it. I can tell you what I did. So what I did was I bought a house in 2013, a primary residence. It's a duplex. It's here. We still live in it. It's great. We love it. And the guy next door pays the mortgage, so it's the best. It appreciated. And so we took out a home equity line of credit on the house, and then we used that for the down payment portion of the loan. You can do it with a conventional loan. You can do it with really any loan that's out there. So it's a great source of a down payment because it's easy to source, and there's not any hey, where's this mattress money of $15,000 that you just pulled out of your sock drawer? There's none of that. Yeah, that's a nightmare in a loan. But so you use the home equity line of credit for the down payment. You use a traditional bank for the the other portion, and you can buy a house basically with 100% financing without, you know, I mean, I bought that Airbnb. I did put $5,000 in a checking account just to like have money in there to like pay for things. And that was it. That was my only out of pocket expense for that. It's bananas that you can do that, but you can. And I love real estate and I love America because of that.
I have to agree with you, Adam. I did that on the last two condos that I bought. So great job. Listen, it's at 7 o'clock. We're at the top of the hour. I really appreciate you being on, Dennis. I loved having this conversation with you. I'm going to have to connect with you after this call and have even more conversation because that seems to be the biggest obstacle wherever I go is finding out the zoning and having someone that's in your corner, like your organization, that does go to bat for you for the short-term rentals. And so, yes, you and I are going to have to continue a conversation. Adam is putting in the chat ways to contact him. Dennis, if you would like, please enter your information in the chat as well so our folks can contact you if they would like to. And the next time I'm in Florida, I'm going to actually look you up. So you're going to have to let me know how to find you and I'll pay attention to where you, what your information is there. And if anybody needs to contact me, I'm just at kathybinner.com and I'll add that in the chat as well. And so let's see if there's any questions. If anybody has any questions, let us know. And I'll kind of monitor the chat here for a moment to see if anyone has any questions.
Cool. I'm throwing Dennis's information into the everyone chat so that we got that. There we go. That's Dennis.
And that's me. I did the same thing. I did it just to host and panelist. So
yeah, no, I do that all the time. I did it like the first three podcasts, I think that we did. And so nobody, I'm like, why didn't anybody call me? And then we go. Yeah.
Yep.
Cool.
Perfect.
Great. Quick question. What software do you guys use to track profits and costs? I use QuickBooks online because my accountant didn't want my chicken scratches and crappy Excel spreadsheet. So he forced me to do that. And it's the best. It's great. I love that. I mean, it's just one, but I only have one. So it's like super easy. Maybe you guys have better options though.
I'm actually using CloudBeds, which is my channel manager, and it has report functions. So I'm using that.
There's a lot of the property management software companies now that are adjusting their software to the smaller owner managers, giving them channel management options. You can track your housekeeping, you can track your tax payments. You know, there's so many options out there now, you know. We have some of our big providers like Cyrus Software. You know, they're just getting into what's called Cyrus Lite. So if you have one property or five properties, they're like giving you a good free package of software. And the only thing they do is they take a percentage of some of the platforms that they attach you to.
Okay, cool.
Interesting. We do have another question over in the chat. Lisa says, I recently stayed at an Airbnb that was an apartment that someone was using as an Airbnb. Can you give your thoughts on that?
What? So it was like an arbitrage thing, maybe? Is that what we're talking
My
about?
My guess is that maybe it was someone that actually had an apartment that they rented and they were using maybe their own apartment. So it's not really an arbitrage because I think they lived there, but they were Airbnb. And I don't know, is it, Lisa, maybe explain, was it just, yeah, it was an apartment that they actually rented and lived in. Now, was it just a room you rented or did you get the entire apartment?
Yeah, we've seen that sometimes where the person, let's say it's near, I'm going to make it up, the Miami Dolphins Stadium, and it's more beneficial for them to leave for a few weeks and rent it out around the game time or something and make some money. It just happens.
We have that in Columbus. There's this crazy phenomenon called the Memorial Golf Tournament that happens every year at Muirfield. And there are like, I don't know, 20 or 30 houses that are on the golf course, probably more than that. And they're just huge, crazy mansions that are like $2 million, $3 million place, like awesome places, right? Which in, you know, Naples, Florida, $2 to $3 million gets you a one bedroom, one bath apartment with no windows. But no, in Columbus, Ohio, a $3 million place is amazing. And these guys will, they will rent it out just for the tournament and make like half a year's mortgage payments just from that one, like 4 day period. And it's amazing. It's incredible.
Yeah. And in Florida here too, the way that the state statute is put together, if you just rent it out three times per year, you know, you don't necessarily have to have a license either. Once you start renting it out more often, then you need to get a license. But if you're just doing it, you know, occasionally here and there, you don't even need to be licensed.
So you're saying that they can just put their apartment out on Airbnb and rent it.
Yeah, we see that a lot around the boat shows and other things that they'll do that just during special events.
And that was kind of the beginning. Like that was what it was like at the beginning, was it was like, hey, if you need a place to stay, like you can sleep on my couch for $20. And which is crazy to me that that was like a thing that people did. And maybe they still do it. I don't know. Is there a couch rental option on Airbnb anymore? I don't think there is, but it used to be that way at the very beginning.
There was one called couch surfing.
Yes. I remember that.
Yeah, they still have the hosted stays here where you can rent out a room or whatever you want to do on Airbnb. Some people are renting out a camper in their backyard or a guest house or a pool house or whatever.
And that is cool. Like I get that, but like, I don't know, like somebody like just chilling, like over there. Like, I don't know. I don't want to do that. That's what Kathy does. I don't do that at all.
It wouldn't be for me either.
Yeah.
I
love that you do it. It's
we
great.
Have our home set up now where the guests actually have a whole separate entrance as they come in, and the owner's suite is in the back of the house. And there's sometimes that I don't even see the guests. They come in late, they leave early, and I don't even see them.
Yeah. You've mentioned that. And I love that setup. That's cool. That is, and I could get my head around that, I think too. Yeah.
But it really comes down to it's all about the guest experience, and there's somebody for whatever you're offering. As long as it's a good, safe environment, it's clean. You know, we've got people, I talked to one guy from a hotel and he said, you know, I wanted to find out what this whole Airbnb thing was all about. So I went and I rented an Airbnb in Orlando so that I could just try it out. He goes, this lady was so nice. I rented a room from her. She gave me wine. She cooked me dinner. It was a hosted stay. And he was like thrilled by it. He's like, I can't believe it. It's a whole different experience than what I offer at a hotel.
That's awesome. I love it. That's so cool.
Oh, well, thank you, Dennis. Thank you so much for being on. Sorry about my technical difficulties up front. I thought I was ahead of the ball game by getting all set up in the corner of my room and having the Wi-Fi on, but I ended up with my phone the whole time. So anyway, so it worked out.
It's great. We still had you. That's what's important.
Yes. So Dennis, thank you. And Adam, thank you so much. And I want to say thanks to everyone that's on. We had upwards of 15 or 16 folks at the height of the conversation. We're now down to 13. It looks like a couple folks had to jump off. So anybody has any last questions before we go? Again, you've got our information. If you open up the chat and take a screen print of that, you know, scroll to where you get our contact information, you can contact us at any time. I'd be happy to answer any questions for you. And so just get in touch with us. We do have an actual mastermind where we get together and we meet up once a month and we just talk about different issues. So contact me if you're interested in that. Any other questions from anyone?
Ooh, I just have one plug. And that's for our next episode, which I'm very excited about because it's my property manager that I've been talking about for like 6 months is going to come on and tell us all his magical secrets about how he keeps me happy. It's the best. I'm so excited.
I cannot wait to meet him as well. So yes, I'm excited as well.
Yeah.
And I invite all you guys to come down September 19th. We're having our annual conference in Orlando. So if you want to spend a couple of days with us, come down, do the trade show, do the conference, do some education. We have about 80 vendors that'll be there, and it's 2 days long, but it'll be fun for sure.
Where is this located, Dennis?
You can go on our website and check out the address, but it's the Wyndham on iDrive in Orlando, September 19th to the 21st.
And what is your website again?
You can go on, it's floridaavr.org.
Floridaavr.org. Sweet. Awesome.
Adam, we might just have to go to Orlando in September.
I can't wait. Let's do it. That sounds like a party. Awesome.
Right. Anybody else want to go? Let us know.
Yeah. All righty, dude.
Yeah. We'll do
it. Thank you so much, Kathy. Thanks for doing this.
Thanks, everyone.
And thanks so much, Dennis. Oh, this is such a blast. Thanks, guys. Great conversation.
Thank you, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Yes. Have a great day.
Okay. Bye-bye.